raise a few issues relating to the program which members might want to keep in mind. The first is it's really organized around a few major activities. The first is a scheduled workshop with National Treasury on the revised Section 32 report. That is currently programmed for 12 October. It would depend also, I think the issue would be how involved the committee would like to be in that workshop. In other words, would they like a full-day workshop, a half-day workshop? Should it be in Parliament or at a venue away from Parliament and so on? So just those sort of logistical issues, I think, that are nevertheless important. The second item which is worth noting is the MTBBS review. The current concern is that we know that the MTBBS is being introduced on the 30th of October, but what's yet to be finalized is the date for the debate in the two houses. National Assembly provisional date is still the 8th of November, and that's significant because it means that there's a very, very short time for the committee to deal with the statement. Hopefully that will be extended, but I understand those discussions still have to take place. And the third item is the second quarter expenditure report. And that is quite difficult to program because of the MTBBS means that the committee has very little time at the end of the year to deal with that report. So depending on the approach of the committee, one option would be to actually carry the report over into the next year. And that's not inappropriate because it's obviously the committee works in terms of the financial year rather than the sort of from December to December. So those are just some of the sort of noteworthy issues. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Secretary. This was just some flesh into the skeleton that you are seeing in front of us. Honourable one.
Thank you, Chair. Just a quick question where on the workshop on the PFMA Section 32 report, I'm just wondering if that includes a proposed amendment to the PFMA that the National Treasury is working on. Is that part of it? And then secondly is regarding the MTBBS hearing, is that a whole day, all day event, or is it just half day like normal committee meetings? Because it's only half day, then I recommend if we apply for special sitting to extend from plenary, because otherwise we'll never make it according to past history.
The co-chair will come on board on that one.
Yeah, thanks, co-chair. Firstly, I think we'll have to correct that workshop, because it's not a workshop. What we always do with National Advisory, because we inform each other. They inform us, we inform them. That should be interaction with National Advisory rather than a workshop, because they are not necessarily workshopping us. We are workshopping each other. So it should be kept as that way in Committee Secretary. Then that interaction is intended. If you recall, we have agreed with National Advisory that the Section 32 report format and the information that's contained there should be changed, because we need more information that can assist us in our oversight function. So in that workshop, we will go together through their proposal so that where it's necessary we can make changes, and then they take it forward, whether we are satisfied with the information. So it will be an engagement based on the changes that they want to bring forth. And on the application for the full day, we fully agree that it should be a full day, because the time that we have available at our hands is very short. But also that our intention is that for the MTBPS, we needn't to call all departments that will get adjustments. But instead, during this meeting, we must look at which departments can we call, few departments where we can make an impact. For instance, the one that are going, we expect that they will get a huge allocation in the adjustments. And even over the medium term, we can focus on those. But the intention is that, because time is short. We need to have a few departments that we can look into. Then on the second quarter report, the way we have a tight schedule, it's going to be very difficult to deal, you know, substantively with the second quarter report. So we would propose that we deal with this, although the information can be made available to members before the end of the term, but we deal with it at the beginning of the year. Otherwise, we won't do justice to the MCDPA. So those are the suggestions. And I think if co-chair is ready with it, there were some departments that at the management meeting we proposed to be part of those that will be called to the MCDPA. And we also indicated that we need to have, besides the department, we need to have people from outside who are not necessarily departments who can make, you know, an input in terms of what their view is. Thanks, Coach.
Thanks, Coach. We welcome the honorable members who've just joined us. We're just starting with our meeting. We must also bring to the attention of this meeting that we've got a special visitor today, Mr. Abdul Wahid Patel. According to his business card here, he comes from, he is the business parliamentary liaison officer. My understanding would be, he'll correct me if it's not correct, he's a parliamentary liaison officer for business. Is that all right?
Honorable Chair, you spot on. For organized business, the Business Parliamentary Office, which is hosted by the South African Chamber of Business, services all of the national organized business formation. So it would be SACOB, NAFCOG, Business Unity South Africa, the Afrikaanse Handels Instituut, FABCOS, etc. And we are having a daily presence in Parliament, and we look conveniently located right on the doorstep of Parliament on Church Square.
Oh, thanks so much for your interest. And I guess it's in line with the promise that organized business made to us way back in 2005. They were working hard at having unified action on all processes and interaction with the Parliament in particular. Yeah. We are happy that undertaking has been put into fruition. Thanks to our business, I saw Mr. Honorable Mr. Sogoni. Please come on board, sir.
Thank you very much, Shepherd. I like the description of Mr. Patel, what you call it. I was also talking to my colleague that we intend establishing our own business organization. I'm sure seeing that he represents all the organizations, he will also fit in our own what you call organization. Saying that because since he's an omnibus, he can take everybody, you know.
As long as he's not a fly by night.
Well, you can't really, you know about it. Thank you very much, Chairman. I was thinking that I was just looking at the Friday where there will be the workshop with Cesare on PFMA Section 2 report. I was listening to the co-chairperson around how this is going to, how she was seeing the indirection. But I was just thinking that unless maybe, I know that I missed the idea was to call the input, but I think I was here, is that workshop is scheduled from 8:30 to 1. To me, it seems like a long time. I was just checking that, would it be possible perhaps to include on that day the salary regulations to be part of that workshop? Because I think that there are lots of implications in terms of what we do around the salary regulations, and I think that it's important for this committee to understand those regulations. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your input. I think the management would be working around those suggestions as you have made. Perhaps we should also amplify that treasury regulations are not new. Maybe they should be just be re-emphasized to the meeting. Yes, we are correct that we've got to refocus on them. The other issue that we are saying about the second quarter expenditure report.
I'm sorry, sir, I missed something. The meeting on Tuesday, the 16th of October, has it been canvassed with other finance committees? Because, you know, we have this regulation that say, joint committees given a particular day. Now, if there's a deviation, it means that we need to canvass support from other committees whose members are also part of this committee, but so that it does not conflict. They don't conflict, you know, because I think that it's important that we ensure that all members do participate in this meeting. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a matter for the secretariat. We are aware of the principles that you are outlining. There is a standing arrangement in that regard. But the secretariat will come on board.
Thank you, coaches. It is what our efforts are made to mirror the JVC program with the programs specifically of the Select Committee on Finance, but also of the PC on Finance, because of the overlapping roles and mandates and responsibilities. So that's why in terms of this draft program, the Friday meetings are always any report which is to be introduced or adopted or any major business usually happens on a Friday. The Tuesday meetings, because of the issue of attendance are usually more discussion based, if you like. That doesn't solve the problem, obviously. That said, the Select Committee on Finance, I think, still needs to finalize its program for next term. So where there is room for cross-pollination and so on, and that still needs to be assessed, but it's an ongoing an issue. Thank you, sir.
Okay. We'll take that in regard as we proceed with the program. The other issue, honorable members, the issue of the second quarter expenditure report. It has been well pronounced by honorable members that we might not have ample time to deal with those reports. But The other crucial issue that we've got to consider is the relevance of this report, the timing factor, and the impact that impact and purpose of this report. Because we do not want to deal with the report for the sake of it. We deal with the report for a particular purpose, of course. And I'm not sure if a second quarter report that will be reflecting on the expenditure from July to September, and then we deal with it in February 2008. What would be our intention with the such a report at that stage? Who will we be trying to inform at that late stage? Therefore, I would implore this committee and members that we try by all means that before we rise in November or early December, we should have dealt with that report, dealt with it, published for action when necessary in Parliament. Of course, one doesn't underestimate the pressures that we are facing. I'm just concerned that we'll be seen. Instead, we'll be just submitting a report for the mere sake of a report. By the time it appears, it would have been missed many purposes of it. It would be meaningless to say that department, certain department is understanding, and it will be saying that in February, perhaps a few days before the new budget is announced. So, instead, no action would be taken even on those recommendations and observations that might be appearing in the report. I would then implore this meeting that we try by all means to deal with the report before we rise in November. We welcome you, Honorable Dithebe. We also recognize your hand. Thereafter, my co-chair will come. So you were just announcing your arrival.
I thought that the co-chair, you were totally opposed to a report being written merely because of the fact that it will be submitted very late and nobody will take any cognizance of it. So but then I think there is an alternative view. So I'm not going to make my point any further because I think your concluding remarks have covered me.
Koche.
Yeah, thank Koche. Kaya, distribute the report. I think what's important is for members to take note of the fact that, like we had earlier on indicated, it's a reality that the next quarter is highly involved in our program. And members' commitment and availability during the meetings is very crucial to ensure that we will be in a position to complete all our work in this team. Basing it on the fact that we work on time frame as a JDC. And that we definitely have to complete the MTBPS activities at least by the 8th, it should be, I think by the 8th. You know the dates which I hear are confusing. They're confusing, I don't know what happens. It's the 5th, then Wednesday the 5th, then November the 8th. Parents, it's confusing, but nevertheless, it's important that we must remember, every year we have 2 weeks to deal with the MTBPA. And this year we've got 1 week. We've got 7 days to deal with the MTBPA. And that's why the initial suggestion that we need to limit the number of departments that will appear before us and other stakeholders that will appear before us. So it will be important that for us to be able to meet the requirement of submitting the second quarter report before the end of the term, we will have to ensure that the two open days that are written in TBPS after the NA debate will be utilized for that report. So that at least for 2 days we can discuss the report, then the third day, which says presentation. It means that the presentation will be done on the 9th, so that we will then engage on the discussion and that the report be ready before we attend or before we write. So, culture is correct, but we were basing it on the fact that the program is very tight. But we will have to work within those time frames. That immediately after the debate of the MTBPS in the NA, and we are not sure yet when will it be debated in the NCOP, but then immediately start with the second quarter report so that we can deal with it and finish it before we arrive. So I would also suggest, Coach, that let's complete the discussion, finalize the discussion on the second quarter report so that we go back to the MTBPS, finalize the activities that we want to happen, agree on them as a committee. After we have finalized the one on the second report, then go to the MTBPS.
Thanks for those comments. Are any other matters concerning that members want to raise concerning the draft program? Well, the silence means just that members are consenting to the program.
Thank you, Coach. I'd just like to rectify the date. Obviously a mistake. Thursday is the 1st of November. Friday is the 2nd. And then, of course, there's Saturday, Sunday, Monday, which would be constituency day. So Tuesday, then, is the 6th. Wednesday, the 7th. And Thursday is the 8th. And the 8th is the date which the NA debate for the DBBS is provisionally set for. Thank you.
Honorable Mr. Colwell.
Yes, Chairperson. I think the concern one has is similar to the one raised by Comrade Sokoni when looking through the days, especially given that most of us on the NCOP side, as you know, serve on other committees. Once I was the schedule of the Joint Budget Committee falls within the week, there is a slight problem there. I think the question of checking or liaising with the chairperson, particularly of the Joint Committee, will be very important, so that some of those days can be spared one way or the other. I'm just saying, as a principle, if possible.
Thanks for the comment. I just hope that members are not also referring to the date where we'll be dealing with the MTPPF, because there we have just no alternative. There's no alternative. We've got to go full steam almost every day until we're through with the hearings and the report. That one, I think, is a standing arrangement with all the finance committees in Parliament. We step off now from the issue of the draft program with the suggested amendments, Coach.
Yes, Coach. The fourth, can we propose that we do not have a hearing on this day and start dealing with the report, discussing the report, so that we don't have a hearing? And we will be left with 3 days for hearing. And if we have 3 days for hearing, I would propose, Coach, that let us look at departments, because in the management meeting, we propose that we have sports, transport, public enterprises, and then we may have another one or two more that will be called for a hearing, so that we can inform the departments before we rise for this team and the portfolio committees that are relevant to those departments, so that at least in their programs they will start including the public hearings on the MTPPF. And with regard to stakeholders that we need to involve, we are proposing from the management that we invite the efficient group, we also invite the IDASA, so that they can make a presentation and do give them the terms of reference with regards to what we expect from them. So I just wanted to highlight those ones so that we agree on the departments that we are calling Coche before we move from the item, so that the committee secretary can start making correspondence with those departments. Thanks.
Thanks, Coaches. I think it will depend on the management. Honorable Sokoni.
Yes, sir. I think, sir, in terms of saying which departments have to be invited for MTPPF, I think that maybe is something that can be kind of administrative, because we shall assume that if you're making suggestions for particular departments to be invited, it's because you are informed by a particular reason. You are informed by a particular reason, because I think I'm not sure if at this stage already you have formulated the reasons why you have identified particular departments, and I think from this side it would be difficult to say no, you can't take this one, you can take this one, but maybe what would be more useful that if there's some kind of, whether it's just a one page or a proper explanation to say, maybe the reason for this is because of this, or they are overspending, and because I suppose that MTPPS will also, during that time, be going with the adjustments as well. So that's the small, what you call it, suggestions I was making.
That's honorable member Sogoni. Yes, we were just teasing members thoughts on which departments we intend calling. But if it was clear to us, but I'm sure none of us is clear here, which departments or institutions will be getting adjustments during the MTPPS. But as honorable members will note, and I don't want to elaborate on this one because it might fall also on the next issue that will be dealt. We'll note that some of the departments we are highlighting there are the departments who have been who are a subject of the special appropriation adjustment. Yeah. That's part of the focus and the reason why they are being mentioned there. Of course, we may have other departments that we will have to call a short notice just because in the MTPPS they've been given some kind of adjustments. Particular departments that have been, in our observation, been experiencing problems with this budget implementation, then we'll have to call this department and say, how will you cope with the additional allocation, seeing that you are struggling with your baseline allocation, for instance. Honorable Mashiko.
Thank you, Chairperson. And I think the list we have gives us an idea of the common departments that appear regularly on our quarterly reports. And out of this list, there are those that will definitely need some adjustments. Because if we can look at the performance, I think I won't talk about education, but if we can look at housing and home assets and water, they regularly have problems. And it's on those bases that I think these departments are supposed to call were highlighted. The fact is just that there are too many, and if we reduce them, as coaches said, we don't have enough time. If we reduce them and think of the entities that you can call, the private institutions that you can call, it will help us a lot. Thanks.
Thanks for the comment.
Thank you, Kasia. I'd just like to I think it's already been mentioned, but just to stress some of the challenges with programming for the MTPPS. One of the major ones, and it's something for the committee I think to keep in mind, is that the MTPPS is introduced on the 30th of October, and no member of parliament, or perhaps a few, know what's going to be in it. So if there are big additional allocations to specific departments, that creates a very big challenge because the committee suddenly has a very, very short time to respond to that. And to call it, let's say, for argument's sake, Department of Transport gets a huge MTEF allocation. Suddenly the committee needs to respond to that. It's already structured a program around certain departments and so on. So the MTPPS creates, and the time frames involved as well, creates very serious programming challenges. And the strategic approach, therefore, is very important. Thank you.
Then, Secretary. In fact, in the management meeting, we thought perhaps we would be trying to communicate with departments, giving some kind of a blanket correspondence that would be saying, as none of us is aware which departments will be allocated more funding during the adjustment. Please take note that if your department is allocated any remarkable amount, you will have to interact with a joint budget committee immediately after the MTPPS during the year. We thought maybe we might be doing that in order to cater for the situation that in a way we're saying departments were taking them some by surprise. We did not alert them beforehand. I think honorable members who can step off this issue now. Honorable Sogon.
That's as we do that, I just wanted to remind the committee that maybe it would be useful that you also sensitize the other chairpersons of those departments that will be invited, so that should they be interested, they can also participate. I mean, they can also attend the close hearing.
Now, you're correct, honorable member. In fact, it's one of the matters that we reflected on in management. But, you know, we are trying to be more than just diplomatic with our counterparts in other committees. Because as they deal with the policy matters that informs the budget and its implementation, it's crucial that they should attend. It's one of the issues that did receive our attention in the management. Thanks for the reminder that honorable members are also brief about it. We step off this issue now. We are now tackling the next two issues, bullet 2 and 3. That is, I don't know whether, yeah, that is the MTPPS review, or what we discussion, not a discussion as such, but we'll be saying we're dealing now with the review. The document, honorable members, that we've just distributed among ourselves is a document that we talked about in our last meeting on Tuesday, that the document was still being prepared. Considerable work has gone into it. As you can see, it's titled that it's just an expenditure review of the past two financial years, and we are also touching on the first quarter expenditure of the present financial year. There is basically nothing new that has been put in the document. All these figures, all these details, comments, recommendations, and whatever that appear in the document are a consolidation of the work and observations that have been made by this committee the past two financial years. Instead of calling this document a pre-budget report, we are just saying now it's a review. It's a document that we thought that it will assist us as we focus in the forthcoming medium-term budget policy statement, and we're highlighting the performance of particular departments during the same period, the past two financial years. Of course, it might be a shortcoming, honorable members, that we are focusing mainly on over expenders and low expenders. But we should also bear in mind that, as we always say, somewhere in the middle category of lukewarm spenders, there might be departments that are entrusted with a major government policy which they are perhaps not fulfilling, or they are not spending according to expectations. But in also to make the report not so bulky and to be sort of be suitable for the purpose of the MTPPS, we highlighted then those departments that will be saying in a street language are habitual misspenders. I know Honorable Diteve is looking at me now. He'll be telling me about this grammar. Habitual misspenders. I'm quick to add that street language so that we understand what we're talking about. The habitual misspenders are those departments who are either indulging over expenditure or indulging under expenditure. So we're coining the term that they are over a period of time we've observed that they are doing this. So we say that they are habitual misspenders. I won't try to outdo the report as it is appearing in front of you, but say to say, we tried also what we were saying by words and text here. We also tried to highlight it by means of tables. For instance, in Table 1, we have the departments that experience the highest total expenditure in the 2005-06 financial year. There is our usual customer, Home Affairs. And many others that are appearing there. For sure, honorable members, we are not merely interested in the figures and the percentages as such, but our main concern is service delivery. So, in the final analysis, we will have to express ourselves whether these departments, having overspent their budget, did they make the necessary impact in service delivery? What is the experience of the softer issues, the nine financial issues, the comments by the general public out there? Are they getting satisfaction? Are they getting the service that that department is intended for? It might be spending up to 100% without a cent over or a cent less. But the crucial question for us is, do they make the necessary impact? Don't people suffer, for instance, with Home Affairs, having overspent their budget, do they meet the expectation and needs of the general public out there? As Home Affairs now is going to high-tech equipment, and therefore that might have an impact in their budget. They might ask for more funds. But what is the view? Should they go into high-tech? Why? In the basic, very basic functions like assisting people standing queue, timely delivery of all the documents delivered correctly and timely to people. When all those issues are not yet mastered correctly, is it really worth it that they are going high tech while they are not mastering the very basic things, the basic functions of them? So some of the questions that we've got to focus. I'm highlighting Home Affairs just in that. Perhaps there might be different questions, hard questions that we may pose to other departments as well. We'll note also, honorable members, that our tables in the past, if you go back to our reports in the past financial years, it was only reflecting the total budget and then the total expenditure, but the underspending or over expenditure would only be reflected in percentage form. What we've done with the research unit and the secretariat, we tried also that the difference in the expenditure, either over expenditure or under expenditure, may also be expressed in rand terms, so that you don't have to calculate or whatever. So that as we are saying, we are reporting to you, we give you the facts as they should be. So that might be a slight deviation, and I do say it's a necessary one from the reports that have previously appeared in Parliament. The report, honorable members, is our instrument that will sharpen our focus as we'll be dealing with the medium-term budget policy statements, noting which departments have been giving additional allocation during this year. Honorable Coach.
Thanks, Honorable Koche. Just in addition to what the Koche has indicated, that one of the changes that we have brought into the report is the usage of bar charts, so that people who do not like, or who understand the figures much better with the bar charts, then they will have that benefit. But members, as you go through the report, you will find that we haven't listed the departments. We've given examples of departments that are underspending, but not necessarily the list. And in the second draft, you will find the list of all departments that are underspending, all departments that are overspending, so that at least the portfolio committees and select committees will be able to use the information much better, knowing which departments are affected. And also, what's not included in the report is report on capital spending. So in the next draft, you will find information in regards to capital spending, so that because capital spending is crucial for economic development and for infrastructure delivery. So that will be included in the next report. So members should not be surprised when it's not reflected. But like the coach has indicated, this is our fact. Oh yes. The other thing is that what we did with the report was to take all our previous reports for the financial year 2005, 2006, and 2006, 2007, including the one that we have just recently adopted, the first quarter report, and look at what are the spending trends in those reports as per our resolutions, recommendations, which are now the resolutions of the House. And after we looked at that, we then decided that to the best interest of the members, we must include the recommendations per quarter as were adopted by the committee, so that when we look at those recommendations, we can pick up what are the trends besides what will be reflected in the graphs and in the figures. What are the trends and which recommendations that were in the quarterly report, which ones can be taken up as final recommendations, which will help us to inform Parliament in terms of what do we expect the executive to act on with regards to our observations with regards to spending. So you will find that towards the end of the document, there are those recommendations as per quarter, each quarter, so that you can easily trace what our recommendations, where are the problems, what are the recurring recommendations, which mean that there are problems which are persistent throughout the previous two financial years. So that at the end, the members, like co-chair has indicated, we must also not necessarily in our final analysis focus on overspenders and underspenders, but there are also other departments which spend well, but the service they provide is not in line with what they are spending. For instance, if safety and security, it spends well, but outside, what is the reality? So these are some of the things that we need to take into consideration. That although they spend well, but the service they give to people, is it as per the budget that's allocated to them, and is it as per their spending? So we are presenting the report before you, members, that although you are seeing it for the first time, go and engage with it. If there are some comments, I think, question, we will take, but members will have the latitude of going through the report over the weekend and to further work on it sometime next week. Thanks, Coach.
Thanks, Honorable question. Any comments about the report? Honorable Sogoni.
My apologies if I'm talking too much. But I think that we must commend the person who drew up the document. I think that a lot of work has really gone into this work. That may be some small, things. We sometimes can change the meaning of what we want to convey here. For instance, I see on page 4, the first paragraph, they say the Infranco transfer of 6.27 billion. I think that maybe it's a million, but it says here billion. Page 4, the first paragraph, the last sentence of the first paragraph. But the small things. But I think that the work itself, I think that is very good work that has been done here. But also, as the chairs were explaining in terms of I think that maybe we, the other day there was a workshop on oversight and accountability. I really found it very useful because on that workshop it also informed us about how oversight is going to, how they want to see oversight, also in terms of information, which sometimes figures alone do not what you call it, reflect, as Coach Personality was saying, that sometimes people spend, but you don't know what they are spending, or you don't know the impact of that expenditure, how do we measure that impact. I think those kind of things, maybe as time goes on, we'll have to look at. That's why sometimes it is very useful that maybe other members, chairpersons of other committees, the portfolio committees specifically, could take in, I wish they could take interest in this thing, because part of that is it's also highlighted here on the conclusion on page 7, the issue of the match spike. We do see that people have spent 100%, but maybe in our future, what you call their reports, I think that it would be very useful to see the trend of the spending. How much did they spend in the first quarter, the second quarter, third quarter? How did they arrive at this 100% or whatever? I think that it can be very much a problem. But this document, as I said, that it's a very good start. But the part of what I see here, part of what was raised the other day, the issues of responses by the department, why is it that the department for the rest of the year spends 52% of the budget? And also, I think this document is really a very useful document, because if you take this document with MTBPS and compare, that if sports, for instance, have spent 52%, are they going to ask for a further, what you call it, adjustment? What they are going to do with the adjustment if they can't spend what they have? And I'm saying that without reasons for those understandings and what. And there's something that has not really convinced me so much. It's when the department says they have understood as a result of the adjustment. My understanding is that they have for this adjustment, knowing that what they want to do with the adjustment. But at the end of the quarter, when they are unable to spend, that becomes an excuse now, that now it's because it's because of the adjustment that made them to be able to understand. And where we're doing, with the type of budgeting system that we have in on MTEF, one suspects that at least we should really be moving towards maturing now with this kind of budget, because it's not an unpredictable budget. It's a budget that is predictable. It has the outer years. There are protections for outer years and all that, those kind of things. Angiboma Shepherd.
We're now good. Okay. Yeah, no, thanks. Otherwise, you see, the misprint that happened, the 627 billion. Oh, I don't know. Treasury would have asked us to go. Where can this all this money will come from? Because as far as I can see, it's beyond the total budget of the country. thanks for that. Thanks for the comments, Honorable Sogo. Yeah. As you mentioned also, it's the issue of the MTEF. For sure, as this committee, we are gearing ourselves in the forthcoming budget in February, so, to make firm comments on certain departments when they are allocated, on their allocations. Because of the mere fact that some of them will be understanding and citing reasons like the one you highlighted, that their spending was delayed because of plannings, because of tenders and whatever, they took so long, as if they didn't know or at least have an estimation of what they are about to be allocated in a particular financial year. The MTEF, as we all know, has got what is called indicative figures for a 3-year. But, honorable members, we should also remind ourselves that, as I was saying earlier on, it is expected of us as a joint budget committee to make firm comments on some of these departments that are not spending according to what they should be. That what is our view with regard to their new allocations, to their allocations in the next cycle of the budget, bearing in mind their performance on the budget. We should be making the firm, very firm comment. You know, as of now, I can almost vouch that a certain department will be spending almost all its budget, and it will only be retaining 1,000 rand to national treasury. I can tell you now, almost. It will spend all its allocation but retain a change, so to say, of 1,000 rand to national treasury. Because it has been doing like that over the years. Spend all this money but return only 1,000 rand to national treasury. This is the amount that we have not spent. How is it possible that year in and year out, say the other expenditure just remains a round figure of 1,000 rand every time? Maybe my understanding of calculation and mathematics is a bit skewed, but I don't know. Those are the issues that we should be probing to some extent at this committee. Coach, you wanted to come on.
Yeah, Coach, it's quite interesting, you know, that the issue that you are raising of having every year 1,000 rand, which has not been spent, 1,000 every year. Part of the challenges that we come across when we do our oversight. But I was just, I just wanted to indicate and also add to what the co-chair has said. Firstly, about what Honorable Sogoni has raised about the quality of the report. If for the first time, I think we need to comment, Kaya, for the very first time, we have received a better quality report. As per our instruction to the researcher, for the very first time, we don't have frustrations of this is not what we wanted to be in the report. And I think that it's a good improvement, and it even makes it easier for us to be able to deliver in time to Parliament. The second thing is that this report, like the question has indicated, when we engage with it is also going to assist us as we deal with the forthcoming quarterly report, also as we go to the MTDPA, so that at least for the very first time, even if we can come with one recommendation, which we will monitor whether National Treasury will take into consideration or not during the budget next year, that we would make a recommendation and check whether the minister will take them on board. That we believe that this department does not need more funding because of 1, 2, 3, you know. So these are some of the issues that as we go to the MTBPA, we will be making firm, for the first time, firm recommendations to National Treasury that, in our opinion, this is what we believe should happen to this department based on the following reasons. And see, monitor whether the minister will take our voice as parliament into consideration in February. Because he always says, your opportunity is during the MTBPA to make comments. So whether it will be taken on board in February, the minister will make that commitment. Or if he will make a commitment that in the following year, it will be taken on board. We will monitor that, and then from thereafter, follow up with the National Treasury through Parliament.
Honourable Sogoni, followed by Honourable Dichere.
I thought that he was a flip chair. I was beginning to enjoy myself with that. So I think that two things that arise from what Honourable Majesty was saying. One is that, in terms, maybe just to amend a bit, that instead of saying that making recommendations to National Treasury, which I think that the committee can, I think that those hearings will be very useful for each department to say, to justify why is it that it should receive further allocations. I think that's what they will be doing in those what you call allocations. So that's why the identification of those departments will be very important. So that I think the approach would be to say they must identify, and I think that questions like they are clear threat plans and whatever the report talks about vacancy rates, how they intend addressing those kind of things and so forth, and the close monitoring of these things. But number two, I think that as a committee as well, maybe we need to improve. We say research is doing good work, but how do you complement what the research is doing? One suggestion would be from myself to invite directly the department and put the department here on the spot so that they can explain themselves. I think that my understanding of the work of the research is to assist the committee to come to a, what we call it, to a conclusion. But I don't think that we should really depend on that because the committee must be able to inform us why is it, I mean the department should inform us why is it, why it's not able to spend. And if we do that, it's clear that we'll be showing them that we're monitoring. But we can't do that if we think that we'll be doing that to invite 34 departments. We're not going to be able to do that. But if, like, it has been done here. It's a few departments that you target. We tell ourselves that this year we'll sit on this department until we see that they improve their spending. And that is the suggestion that I'm making. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman.
Thank you very much, Chair.
I'm trying to reconcile what the co-chair has said with, first of all, what happens in the MTEC process, and the fact that, of course, in terms of 77.3, that we do not as yet have legislation that definitively allows us to make interventions with regard to the budgetary process, except perhaps at a point where Parliament might decide that it's unhappy with the budget as it stands and therefore not adopt it. And I think that is very unlikely. But you will remember that I put a question to National Treasury 2 or so weeks ago about a hypothetical situation where, say, an official of the department might act unreasonably if, for instance, a particular department makes a bid for more funds, etc. And they went on to outline a very extensive process where not only National Treasury is involved, but other departments, and how those expenditures or those bids get justified and so forth. And I think after that particular explanation, it became quite clear that it is not just a one-way traffic, as it were. And what I'm trying to figure out is how, in the light of this executive action, so to speak, in terms of the MTEC process, we will then effectively intervene in the manner that the co-chair has suggested, as Parliament during the MTD period, to say, let the following departments, which in our view are habitual culprits or whatever, not get an extra whatever millions or billions of rand. I'm just trying to, you know, figure out in my mind whether that would, in practical terms, be helpful at all, given the fact that we are not necessarily involved in that MTEC process, except at the point where we monitor these expenditures and obviously have an opportunity to make our comments during the MTP. I'm sorry to be long-winded, but I hope you got the gist of what I said.
Thanks so much. Yes, we do get your point. Of course, the issues, Honorable Zitebe, that you are highlighting are important. But then this committee should not, in my view, deny itself the opportunity to pronounce its displeasure, because that is as far as we can go, only pronounce our displeasure at the spending or at the budget implementation of a particular department over a period of time. I think that will also be canvassing some response from the Ministry of Finance. Because in the absence of the formal legislation in Parliament to amend a budget, our only opportunity is to comment on the outer years, informed by the performance of certain departments during a period of time. So I'm saying, really, we should utilize that opportunity to pronounce our feelings and our views in that regard. I'm of the view that even if we merely pronounce our displeasure, that would be tantamount to asking for a review of the allocation. Of course, bearing in mind that we will not at any stage be trying to tamper with the predictability of the allocation. Honorable Sokoli, indeed that is an issue that we should be going to. The issue of holding hearings with those departments that we are sort of profiling. Because it might be going in the, on the lines of having ourselves having to pronounce on the performance of a department without hearing its side of the conflict. Is part of the object of the cost. But I think that is an issue that you've got to be gravitating to hold the hearings so that our comments by way of a report are truly conclusive. There will be no reservations about any other department having not been granted the opportunity to explain itself. Honorable Mashiko and Honorable Ditebe.
Thank you, Kosha. I think we should not undermine what we are doing here, because we are definitely on the right track. Budgets are being voted by us in Parliament, and this committee, to me, is the right platform to go back and stand there. We are here passing votes based on what the department told us that they will do. So someone will just have to hear, because we can't just wait for SCOPA to react on what we failed to prevent during the whole process. So what we are doing, we should just keep at them doing it. And there will be obviously some response will have to be there, because right now there's already some response from other people. They are aware that we are doing something and we are in the right track, and some portfolio committees are already feeling it, and we can see how it goes. And if we keep on this, doing this, I think that is what we should constitutionally be doing, even if it's not recorded anywhere. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman.
Thank you very much, Co-Chair. I think, indeed, your response is very helpful to the perhaps comment come question that I put to you. Yes, indeed, in the light of the absence of 77 sub-3 legislation, to a certain extent we are hamstrung, but not altogether helpless, so to speak. We must indeed register our displeasure with those departments that have the tendency to commit the kind of crimes, quote unquote, that we refer to, because we have some kind of framework in place. Not only do we have the government's own program of action, but broadly the government-wide monitoring and evaluation system. But we have our own Vision 2014, which I think is quite an ambitious program that in a sense competes with the MDGs, and I think we should at all times point that out, or draw the attention of those departments that are lagging behind to the issues that I've just referred to, because we have quite a number of instruments, and we will be very much right in pointing out
those issues that I've talked about. Thanks.
I thank you, Honorable Chairman. And that's why we were saying ourselves having profiled the over-expenders and the under-expenders, we might be running a risk of neglecting to monitor those crucial departments that are facing or which are mandated to implement a major government policy. For instance, water affairs and forestry in terms of the bucket eradication process. That has got a timeline that is coming 3 months to 2 months down the line. It's not profiled yet in our report. Yet, there is just 2 months before we have to 3 months to implement and finish that kind of a policy. Honorable Chair, yes, that was my way of also reflecting on the MDGs, the Millennium Development Goals as such. I guess we, in our ongoing work, we will also be reflecting on those. And thanks for highlighting that. Honorable Mashiho, yes, of course, we do have some kind of a nice sleep, you know. I'm sure we're starting to sleep peacefully each night because of some progress that we're making. You don't turn around in your bed 10 times before the morning. But issues being like that, there is a caution about being self-congratulatory to the extent that you might fall in a trap of a false security. We must also therefore hasten to say our process is not yet perfect. I dare say, honorable members, that what we are endeavoring to do by this report, the review, it has never happened in the life of any of the previous joint budget committees. So we're going forward. I'm sure yes, we'll be having some comments, some hints as to how we can improve. Like I'm saying, it's not yet a perfect process. We might be leaving crucial issues outside of our focus. And therefore, that's the purpose of holding a meeting with as broad a stakeholders as possible. Yeah, Coach, I wanted to come.
Yeah, thanks, Coach. I just want to remind members that, like we had said, this is the first time we are doing it. And we mustn't even doubt ourselves that what we are doing is we are not in the right track. We mustn't doubt ourselves, but steady but sure, like the coach has said, we will arrive there. There's always the first time you do something, you improve on it. And definitely, in the absence of the money amending their legislation, we must, where we have space, we must make an impact in terms of our response in regards to how departments are spending, whether it's in line with the service that they deliver. The coach has just indicated that with the Department of Water Affairs, they have committed themselves to budget eradication. And the reality is, I'm not sure, Kote, it might be that they are going to achieve it at the end of this year. It might be. But you check how long has it been there that they said they are going to eradicate, actually, not reduce it by a particular period. So these are some of the things that we cannot keep quiet about. We cannot keep quiet about the fact that education said that by the end of, I think it was 2005, when the State of Nation address was presented to Parliament, that no child will be learning under the tree at the end of that year. And even now, there are many who are still learning under the tree. We can't keep ignorant of those facts, that education gets the biggest share, and they committed themselves to ensuring that no child learns under the tree, but it still takes place. We can't ignore them. We can't ignore the fact that the Department of Health gets a hospital revitalization grant, and which at the end of the year, you find that they have underspent on it, and hospitals are there, people still have a problem. The hospitals will not be revitalized, and people are just frustrated. This, we can't ignore them. They are facts that we face when we do our constituency work, when we do our oversight function. And it's like we have said, let us not doubt the process that we have started. Let us continue with it and make recommendations that will have an impact over the medium term on the budget, so that the Minister of Finance, if he doesn't take them on board, we've got the right to call him to this committee, to appear before this committee, and then as well as the DG, so that they come and tell us what is difficult when we make recommendations and they do not take them on board. He knows very well, the Minister of Finance, that this process of the MTVPS must inform him, partly in terms of what do you expect as the legislature. But like I say, we've got the right to call him to account before us if he ignores our recommendations based on our observations. Thanks, Coach.
Thank you. Except that we are not assuming anything. Sure that we are not assuming anything. We'll just be submitting the report and wait for the results. Honorable Dissent.
Thank you, Chair, the Co-Chair. I think this point that the Co-Chair has just made about, for instance, children that still learn under trees, or the hospital revitalization program not being quite on course in, say, certain provinces. It is something I think that we've been talking about for some time. But I think we will also remember that the one dilemma that faces us in that regard is that of the very fact that these funds, the Department of Health, in a sense, becomes a conduit for transfers and subsidies. And the other fact, of course, is that of the concurrent powers that is between national and provincial governments. I would like us to formulate a foolproof approach, so to speak, so that we do not come across as merely cutting on the sidelines while this whole problem recurs. And we have talked about the need for us to at some point come together with portfolio committees, and I think the select committees of the NCOP and so forth, because what health will do, as it has done before, they'll say, if you look at what we receive from National Treasury, we duly process whatever it is due to the provinces, it is the provinces that are not failing and so forth. I think what we should be mindful of, and those departments, be it education or health, is that we're not some kind of a federal animal where we will say, you know, this particular tier or whatever level of government has done its best. It is up to the other tiers or levels to see. It always, everything that we do is with a view to achieving what we want, we set about to achieve in terms of the letter and spirit of the Constitution, to ensure that our nation is united, our country is united, and that democracy accrues, the benefits of democracy accrue to all and sundry in our country. And I'm saying that perhaps not necessarily now, but it's something that we need to sort out, the legal and other contradictions notwithstanding, in terms of exclusive and concurrent powers that obtain, that is, between national government and provincial government. And I think it's something that we need to look at so that, you know, we don't keep on talking about the same thing every year. That's just my view.
Yeah, thanks so much, Honorable Chairman, Secretary.
Thank you, Chair. If I may, Chair, probably if I'm exceeding my role, but I think what Mr. Tebu raised is actually very crucial, because it impacts on the nature of the committee's role vis-a-vis other committees. If you talk, for example, about specific grants in the Department of Health or the Department of Education, I think that JVC should be in a position to be able to monitor how those grants are being allocated and spent and so on. But I think it's important to recognize also the jurisdictions, if you like, of the other committees. A health grant, for example, the Portfolio Committee on Health should be engaging with that issue. But I think what the role of JVC is, and this is where the issue of concurrent powers is to examine and to perhaps focus on budgeting processes that are cross-cutting. So if you look at, for example, the issue of concurrent functions, that is really related to the social sector. It affects a variety of departments. So that it's only the JVC as a committee that is in a position to actually engage with the process. And that applies also to, for example, other budgeting processes as well. So I think that point goes to the heart of perhaps what the JVC as a committee was established to achieve. Thank you.
Now, thanks for that emphasis. Yeah, there are issues that stand still to be addressed. For instance, this issue that you mentioned the hospital revitalization grant. If we would reflect on that one, whether it is making the necessary impact. Sometimes it does not. Despite the fact that the hospital might have been totally revitalized, that project might have been completed 100%, but it might not be making the necessary impact. The complication is that where one has observed this issue is that hospital, a district, for instance, a district hospital is totally revitalized with personnel, equipment, and everything, buildings, infrastructure and whatever. But you find that it does not fulfill its purpose, so it is not making the necessary impact. The observation is because of the absence of a concomitant funding or focus in the other spheres of government. For instance, the district hospital, you find that it becomes now clogged up, long queues, with the, only the local people coming there for purely primary health care. Why? Because the province, either the province or local government, has not, to some extent, done some kind of concomitant or even maintenance in the local clinic or the local hospital. So, the high-tech and attractive system that is there in the district hospital now attracts local people who should be going into the clinic for primary health care or even in a, now they are clogging up the hospital that is intended for training of nurses or for referral of very highly sophisticated matters of patients. So it does not, that hospital is now not giving the opportunity to serve its purpose because the other spheres of government were either not alerted or were not brought into the party of maintaining their systems and facilities so that this thing, this new kind of healthcare is felt even at the local level. There's an issue that we also have got to highlight. I'm sure the sector committees on health are aware of this issue. Honorable Chair. My apologies. I recognize my co-chair.
Yeah, same co-chair. What Honorable Chair has said to is one of the things that has been coming across as a committee, and it's become a challenge. As we were doing our work, we have discovered, and I think maybe somewhere it should be covered by one of our recommendations to Parliament, the ones that are part of the documents that you have, that we have this problem of concurrent functions, the impact of concurrent functions in terms of service delivery. Also, the impact of intergovernmental fiscal relations, that somewhere departments find themselves in a difficult position and to implement the budget as expected, but also to make impact, because we are not only interested in the figures per se, but you are also interested in what do those figures achieve. That it's our responsibility, although we are not a policy making committee, but it's our responsibility. As we make recommendations, we make recommendations on what are the things that we see as a committee in our oversight function to be constraining easy spending and you know, easier service delivery to our communities in regards to how, you know, our relations are being structured, so that government can sit and reflect on what do we say as a committee and what are the realities that they come across, and in order to ensure that at least, you know, in the form of amendments, although we would not be saying make amendments, but as they reflect, they will realize that indeed what they are experiencing, we have already mentioned as part of our observations and as recommendations, so that they can then start addressing them and making it easy for them. Because what we are interested in at the end of the day, the money, the public tests that's available, must move our people from the level of poverty where they are right now to a better level. That's why we talk of a better life for all. And whatever is in the on the way of ensuring that people get a better life, we need to pinpoint all those things, hiccups, so that government can address them. So I think what you have just indicated, we have come across it as we went on. And even the department, when they appeared before us, they've indicated that that's one of their frustrations. I think even in the either I don't recall which document of, from National Treasury where it's mentioned that that's part of the problem. But being part of the problem, we need to say government must do something to address that problem so that it's out of their way to be able to take, I mean, to give better service to our people. Yeah, thanks.
Co-chair, Honorable Tewis. No, Chair, I think those are indeed very useful comments that the co-chair has made, which then takes me to, I think, two very, in my view, crucial points. And these being the current process as undertaken by the Department of Provincial and Local Governments with regard to a review of the type of local government system that we want and so forth, and tying that to the second one, that is that of the creation of a single public service, because in my view, and I want to use this one of the single public service to go to, I mean, to deal with the point that you raised about a district hospital, for instance, providing a certain type of services in the healthcare system, in a sense being overburdened in the aftermath of the revitalization of a particular hospital or that hospital because of some negligence on the part of, because of neglecting maintenance or even upgrading of facilities at local clinics. And I think if we were to stick purely with, say, personnel, in an instance of a public, a single public service, I would imagine that personnel and perhaps equipment would be transferred in certain instances to areas that are not well capacitated in order for them to give people the necessary quality of services efficiently, economically, and effectively, as we always say in terms of our constitution. But these just in comments, and indeed they may be very remotely linked, but these being comments that I'm making, so as to say that it would seem to me that this committee should also be watching those two processes very keenly, to the extent that what will be the final product will indeed impact one way or the other on what we would like to see as part of an efficient and effective delivery of services right across the board in the whole country. Thanks.
Thank you. Honorable Sokoli.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that, Chairperson, earlier we indicated that this committee has not been in existence for a long time. And therefore, I think that it will be useful for us when we make some of the, what you call, resolutions and recommendations, perhaps ensure that we have access to all the sites. I'm saying this because I would like us to be very careful in beginning to apportion blame on the other spheres of government and assume that one sphere of government is perfect, but the problem is the other spheres of government. I don't know how much experience do we have of talent authority to what you call. I'm not sure if we have the authority to conclude that is the case. Because I think that as we're sitting here, we have different experiences. If I may make an example, for instance. I think that I agree to it. The other co-chairperson, earlier we had made, for instance, a recommendation that it will be useful to invite departments and put them here in front of us with treasury
so that we can really try to get deep down to the issues of expenditure. Taking these issues of concurrent or dependent functions, for instance, where the national department make a transfer to a provincial department for local government. I think that government, for instance, has made PFMA. PFMA is a very useful, what you call, a piece of legislation in terms of monitoring and the Division of Revenue Act, which gives certain responsibilities to national department to ensure that it undertakes certain responsibilities. The provincial department, your local, what you call, the government. And in those experiences, we see that where is the gap? Is the gap perhaps with local government? Is the gap with local government? Is the gap with national government? Someone somewhere is failing to do his or her responsibilities. If one has a responsibility to monitor, are the systems of monitoring there? Are they in place? Are they working? Those kind of things. What are the frustrations that the other side is, what you call it, is experiencing? But I'm saying, I think that perhaps as time goes on, we will have to, what you call it, to expose ourselves in all this, what you call it, system, so that at the end, when we make what you call it, a conclusion, we should really be able to ensure that that conclusion is properly informed. Because for for me, I would be skeptical to rush to what the college would do to apportion blame. That's why I was suggesting that it's better to bring the people here and understand. For instance, it is easy when you're talking about concurrent functions to say, no, these other spheres of government are responsible for this. If you take the Department of Enterprises, which is a national department, and you're spending 60%, who do you blame? Do we blame the... There are no concurrent functions there. But that's why I'm saying so we should not rush at apportioning blame, but we should try to delve deep into the matter to understand it. That's what I was just trying to caution us from doing. I'm afraid because I'm a bit afraid. And our constitution, I think it's chapter 3 of the constitution around cooperative governance. Though we can talk about the spheres of government, in terms of your that what you call of the constitution, in terms of the PFMA, there are responsibilities each department. I mean, each sphere of government has certain responsibilities or certain powers over the what you call the other sphere of government. For instance, we're going to have a workshop on the Section 32 report, so that would clarify what is the responsibility of national treasury, what is the responsibility of your provincial treasury, what are the responsibilities, for instance, of your DPLG, your provincial department of local government, and in relation to others. If there are failures, where are these failures? But if you're inviting me, I would want to call. It's very easy for me to say, well, Honorable One is a person who is a weak link. I'm the right person. It's easy to do that because he is not there to defend himself. So I know that I've just made a hypothetical, what you call, a situation, but I think that there are practical experiences from somewhere. If I may make an example, Chairperson, a month ago went to the Eastern Cape and spoke about the problems of failure, for instance, to deliver on water, on electricity, and what. But when we're sitting here, it was very easy to us because to blame. But when we got there, it was a different story for us, experience to see. But where are our water? Where are these gaps? You find it difficult to really say this one is responsible. Our monitoring mechanisms, are they working? Evaluations, are they properly in place? But ours is an evolving, what you call it, democracy. Hence, we keep on coming with this document. I referred earlier to the new document that that Treasury introduced the other day of Treasury and the President around your oversight and accountability. Thank you,
Chairman. Thanks so much, Honorable Sekoni. I was wondering whether you are not making a mini speech, but thanks for the comment. We have highlighted those issues, the caution that we should exercise. In fact, it wasn't a conclusive statement that we are saying. We're just citing an example. And in the example that we highlighted of a hospital, almost all the spheres of government could be found to be wanting in one way or the other. We're not saying the local, the other province or local are the guilty parties. For instance, in the example I cited, when you go to this hospital and ask this district hospital, they tell no, this is happening because National came with the idea of this district hospital without us knowing, because National does not participate in our planning exercises when we do the IDP. So we were caught by surprise as local and provincial about this thing. That's what is happening. So it's just an example that we're citing. We are acutely aware of the limitations and, in fact, the caution that we've got to exercise on these matters. Before I give you honorable co-chair, you know, it's not an accident that we did not introduce one of our guests here. Advocate Jenkins is with us here, I think. It's the first time that he visits this committee. In this term, we have been with him in some, I think in a workshop. He was with us, but that he specifically come and sit in this committee is the first time. Would then be making a belated welcome to our parliamentary legal advisor, Advocate Jenkins. I'm sure as we are about to conclude, we will allow him some space if he wants to say anything. But before then, let me allow you, Honorable Koshen.
From time to time, you switch off the door. I better use mine. Thanks, Coachip. I think one thing that should be clear to us members, if we take the approach of being extremely cautious, we won't do our work. We won't do our work as a legislature. We must be cautious, but we mustn't be extremely cautious. As Parliament, we vote for the budget. We vote for each budget vote. And what happens to that budget vote? First thing, National Treasury must account. Because on monthly basis, National Treasury receives reports from different departments. And we can't, if National Treasury doesn't do it, we must apportion blame to National Treasury. Because it must give it. If it faces difficulties, it must indicate that it faces difficulties to get those reports from the department and the provinces. It is responsibility. National departments, we vote for their votes, including the transfer payments. They must ensure that they have monitoring systems in place to monitor what is happening to the money that they transfer to the provinces and to entities. And there's no way we can say there's no one to blame, honorable members. Finally, the person, the vote, if we vote for the vote of health must ensure that it puts systems in place to monitor spending on those transfer payments, spending by the provinces. And which therefore says, if it doesn't, we must engage them so that they can have those systems in place. Because otherwise, come the end of the financial year, the Auditor General is right to qualify them. That what has happened to those transfers, the Auditor General has a right. And we can say there's no one we can apportion blame to. We apportion the blame to the National Department because it hasn't put systems in place. It must be interested in what is happening to the money that's been allocated to the, I mean, has been transferred to the provinces. And not necessarily in the transfer payment, but even funds that go to the provinces as the equitable share. It must be in the law of what is happening to the budget of those departments in the provinces. So I'm just saying, members, some of, you know, when we do our work, you mustn't, you know, be fearful that maybe what we are doing is wrong. We are right. The national department must do its way. If money goes to local government, or if provinces take a long time to transfer money to the to local municipalities, the DTLG must come and account to us. What systems are in place to ensure that on monthly basis they monitor? That is why it's a concern to this committee that most of the national departments have high vacancy rates. Because they can't. They are not in a better position to go and monitor what is happening in those provinces, what is happening in those municipalities. And that's why I'm saying, you know, when we do our work, let us not doubt ourselves. Because legislation is there, it's guiding us. And I still maintain it, there must be somebody to apportion blame so that the work can be done. If no one is apportioned blame, no work will be done. We will continue having, you know, huge budgets without any necessary impact on our communities. So I just wanted to clarify that one, member, that we have to. And if we don't, it will mean that everybody will be released. And if we apportion blame, and blame was apportioned wrongly, we will accept it that we apportioned it wrongly. We will. And I don't think that will be, you know, a fall of the sky. We will accept it. But the fact of the matter, like I say, all departments submit reports to National Treasury on monthly basis. National Treasury must tell us. That's why even in the cash flow projection, we tell National Treasury that we need those cash flow projections. If they are not forthcoming and they have problems with certain departments, they must indicate that we are having problems and we must see to it through our oversight function what should then happen. So I don't want to give it this speech, Coach. I was just trying to clarify that one, that we must be cautious, but we must not be extremely cautious because we won't do our work. And that's where the department wants us. That's where they want us. Thanks.
I wanted to recognize now Advocate Jenkins, but I'm seeing hands. Honorable Zitab, you want to say something before?
Chairperson, just to concur with the co-chair, you know, I think we all have this common experience where, despite you being a member of parliament, national MP, that is, there still remains a great deal of confidence on the part of the people that you represent to a point even of them wanting you to intervene in respect of, you know, such things as the allocation of lands or even houses and so forth, right? And I think immediately about the frustration that people, and this may not be the case in all municipalities, have with regard to the uncertainty that they have as to whether they will have a house at the end of the year and so on and so forth. And I think the uncertainty will be eradicated by full provision of information as to when next are people going to have houses built for them, how many subsidies will be issued. But now if there is uncertainty and so forth, and I'm linking this to the whole issue of us saying housing, for instance, you set yourself a target, the government has set itself a target of eliminating informal settlements by 2014. In keeping with what is allocated to you annually, are you on track in ensuring that that does happen? And I think co-chair is very much correct. I mean, that is why there's the whole notion of the separation of powers. The executive, and perhaps correctly so, might feel that it is doing its bit to ensure that all of these goals are met. But we have a responsibility as a legislature to ensure that these things are not only, you know, declared in public meetings or whatever, or in visits, but that in fact we ensure that people do get those services that they are entitled to. Sorry, co-chair, to be too long-winded. I think it's the advocate now. Thanks.
Yeah, before the advocate, Honorable Sokol, but please bear in mind that also just here by the door, our own refreshments are now losing their value because of, yeah.
It's just one minute. I think all that I would like to say is that I would like us to continue to discuss these vertical issues and clarify one another. Because I suspect that we're talking past one another. I do suspect.
Thank you. I'm sure we have avenues that we can, yeah. Thank for the comment that takes us forward. Before, so many people are jumping before the advocate of Coach.
Thanks, Coach. I was just checking when we see that Advocate Jenkins must say something. Whether it's in relation to him addressing, you know, telling us what he does. Because I thought that he would be most appropriate when he feels that somewhere we are not, we are sort of offline in terms of legislation and in terms of the legal power. So I thought that that would be the time when he would step in and say, but here, this is how you should take it. But as we continue with our discussions, I'm sort of skeptical, you see. So that's why I say I don't know because we're still engaging, but I was just making a comment. Thanks.
Perhaps this is the reason why we just call the advocate towards the far end of our meeting. He must have observed a thing or two, but I did not want to sort of set a line, but just give him the leeway to say whatever he wants to say. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Honorable Co-Chairs. The reason I'm here is that a strategic decision was taken to be more proactive in support for committees. So legal services have apportioned certain committees to certain of the advisors, and I am in support of your committee, Co-Chairs, and Honorable Members. I'm also supporting SCOPA, so I will mostly have a clash on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, and depending on the priorities, I have to excuse myself with either of the committees. Fridays I am free, so I will have a standing arrangement if that is in order to be here on Friday, and other times when there are no clashes or when if the committee secretary would request me directly to come because it's an important issue or there's a presentation to be made, I will attend and excuse myself from SCOPA. On the discussion itself, Honorable Co-Chairs, I rarely would say that this is the wrong direction to follow, because in law, one just advises on an opinion. We'd really be sticking your neck out too far to say that this is wrong or this is right. If you are good and you do reach the apex and you're in the judiciary, then of course you have that prerogative to say that this is wrong and this is right. What I picked up from the discussion, the latter part of the discussion, which is now not the technical part of the report and so on, about who is now fundamentally responsible for the implementation specifically of socioeconomic issues. Those predominantly four, which in law we will call the Section 76 legislation, Schedule 4 of the Constitution. And there the Constitution makes no secret of it that the implementation of that legislation rests with provinces. National legislation, we emphasize that, but the implementation, unless the legislation specifies otherwise, lies with the provinces. So the cooperation which was mentioned by Honourable Member in Chapter 3 of the Constitution, it's clear, it's evident. There should not be there should not be a situation where there's a lack of communication between provincial and national government. One can also say we have only one government in this country, divided into different spheres, and we have MINEC. And we have the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act. And those are setting out the framework in where the one government then operates. And one shouldn't get to a point where people, officials in a hospital would be saying, well, this is a surprise for us and this is the reason. Those reasons are there, but certainly the culprit, the problem, maybe it's not a culprit, but the problem needs to be addressed. And I think this is where the committee is there. Thank you for the opportunity, Honourable Co-Chairs.
Thanks so much. Advocate Jenkins, like we conceded earlier on, that we, as much as we take pride in our dedication and hard work here, we concede that it might not be as yet a perfect process. So we welcome your support, as well as National Treasury support, big business support, and as we understand here, as much as we understand the word support does not mean agreeing, does not imply agreeing. It means saying, oh yeah, you are learning to walk, but yeah, don't get into higher steps all the time. Try to walk on level ground first, then you master walking. Tomorrow you might be running. That's the kind of focus it was. But yeah. Half a minute.
I know that we're not obviously dealing with legislation and all of that, but I think the issue, or rather the incident of Parliament offering us the kind of service that the advocate here will be offering after the committee, and this also applies to portfolio committees, as far as I know, is a very recent phenomenon. There have been problems, I think, in the past of there being insufficient capacity, so to speak, in that area. But I, in certain committees where legislation is dealt with, that is in portfolio committees, at least in one committee, I mean, I must not exaggerate, I have noticed a rather disturbing trend where, and of course this depends on the leadership of that particular committee, the parliamentary legal person will say something that contradicts the state law advice office and so forth. And I just want to say we are not dealing with legislation, but those protocols and things like that, have they been smoothed over? Have they been sorted out just so that we know what's the role of each? Because he will be present, say, in a committee, and so will the state law advisor, and mostly will link up with the department.
Yeah, no, thanks for that question again. But I'm sure we can deal with it outside the meeting. We are taking refreshments now for 10 minutes. I'm sure we've got just to come back and deal with some logistics. Yeah. Announcement and so forth. Basically, there are no issues that are still outstanding, except that we could not just conclude a meeting with refreshments. The report, the draft report in our position, honorable members, so we will have to read and digest. As we have earlier on said, we invite comments, advices, and many, and whatever that can come from yourself, even from our guests here. As we said, it is ongoing, it's work in progress, this report, as we also highlighted that there are a few items that we have to add to the report. But that would not change the gist of the report as it is appearing before you now. Sometime next week, I hope we'll have some time then adopt the report so that it becomes a report of Parliament. Everybody should have some sight of it and act on it appropriately.
I don't know what this means. Well, for now, you see, we are still endowed with some resources, but you know, the long-term trajectory is that our economy must be knowledge-based. So, exploitation of natural resources can only be in the short term. I know you wish as well for me.
That might be a misrepresentation of some kind, but yeah, for now I don't see anything. I'm not part of it. Honorable one.
Okay, thank you. I suppose, I think just to speed up the adoption for next week, can I just point out my list of members or the committee next week, where if you look at page 6, the repetitions there on 2 or 3 are on a few paragraphs, a lot of the contents are repetition. So perhaps the committee side can just consolidate the 3 paragraphs. We can make it into 1 or 2 paragraphs and make it as a short amendment. We don't need to reprint the whole draft again, just on that particular section, because the figure is being repeated, the amount is being repeated, the objective is being repeated there. Thanks.
Thanks for that comment.
Okay.
Yeah. May I now thank each and every one of you and thank your comments in advance. Thank you very much. This meeting is now adjourned.